and welcome to the Waterways Ireland podcast, a new series with me, Turtle Bunbury, in which I'm exploring the long and rich history of Ireland's waterways. In this episode, Goddesses of the Water, I'm homing in on about a dozen of our biggest and most enchanting rivers and lakes, and I'm going to look at how each one got its name. There's a wonderful tale in Irish mythology about how Ireland's 12 biggest rivers were created by a single hailstorm. The storm it broke from the skies just as Diarmait MacCairbill, the newly crowned High King of Ireland, was hosting an assembly at the Hill of Uisnech in present-day County Westmeath. And so that becomes the origin story for all of those rivers, like the Shannon and the Barrow and the Boyne. They were all born in the mother of all hailstorms. Mind you, I wouldn't chuckle too cynically. There's a record in the annals from 1134 of a hailstorm in Ireland in which the hailstones were as big as apples. I like the hailstorm theory for the origin of our rivers. It has the essence of distant truth that you often find in oral history, like the Great Flood. I'm always impressed with how the legends of the Great Flood appear all over the Mediterranean. You know, the biblical Great Flood, Noah's Ark and all that. Pure fantasy? Or are these tales the legacy of some ancient memory of a time when the Atlantic Ocean bashed through the Straits of Gibraltar and created the Mediterranean 5 million years ago? That's got to have been a pretty big flood, eh? And I guess I should also acknowledge the old theory that our oceans were created by water bombs from outer space, icy comets and asteroids full of water that pelted our planet over and over again 4 or 5 billion years ago. It's a theory, I know, but who knows? Hailstones, comets from distant galaxies, anything's possible, Scully. In this episode of the Waterways Ireland podcast series, I want to talk about the mythology associated with our waterways, the natural ones, our rivers and our lochs, and maybe we'll mention a few springs and wells along the way. Because there's a lot of fantastic stories about the origins of Ireland's rivers and so on. In fact, every river and loch on this island of Ireland derives its name from a story from Irish folklore. That's not wildly surprising, of course. The same can be said of most cultures. It's a logical human thing. Madly, water accounts for about 60 to 70% of our body weight, and perhaps in consequence of that, we've always had a deep spiritual connection to water. It's our most precious resource. It's intimately linked to our cultural development and has been since the dawn of time. We worship it for its therapeutic virtues, for its links to evolution as the source, the essence of life. And water has held a rich and divine symbolism since ancient times. It doesn't matter which civilization you zero in on. In Egypt, you had Sobek, a god who rose from the primeval waters of Nun to create the world and made the Nile from his own sweat. The rivers and lakes of ancient Greece were full of female spirits and deities, and there are numerous legends about those who derived inspiration by drinking from their waters. The Aztecs had a goddess who represented every plausible manifestation of water, from tiny spring to mighty ocean. In India, the Ganges, the holiest of all rivers on the subcontinent, is named for the goddess Ganga, mother of all human beings. And you will perhaps be familiar with the image of Hindus gathering along the river during holy festivals to purify themselves in the water. In Australia, the tradition of the Nurungeri, people of the Lower Murray River, is that the river is a lifeline, a giant artery created by a giant Murray codfish as it desperately sought to outrun their great ancestors chasing after with spears and whatnot. And you'll find similar tales from the Kalahari to Siberia to the Colorado. Now, I don't want to entirely baffle you with the folklore of other cultures in this episode, because this series is about Irish waterways, but those examples are just to highlight the way in which so many human cultures and mythologies are rooted in the water. And needless to say, that's very much the case with Ireland too. Our earliest history book is the Lua Gualla Éireann, the Book of Invasions. It's an 11th century collection of poetry and prose. We don't know who wrote it, but it was written in an early form of Gaelic. And the author, or authors, claim to have collected those stories from an oral tradition that stretched back deep into the distant mists. The principal version of the Book of Invasions that we have today was actually compiled in the convent of Lisgoole Abbey on the southern banks of Upper Lough Erne, not far from Enniskillen. And that work, written in 1631, was overseen by Micheál O'Clery, a Franciscan scribe. He was one of the Four Masters. You might have heard of the Annals of the Four Masters. So these guys were apparently reproducing a history of Ireland that was written 1,000 years ago, and that was a history that the Christian Church in medieval Ireland heartily approved of. They kind of adopted the Book of Invasions as the official history of Ireland, to be read hand in hand with the Old Testament of the Holy Bible. So, for instance, I mentioned Noah and the Great Flood earlier. Well, that event gets a significant mention in the Book of Invasions when Cessair, Noah's granddaughter, sails to Ireland. She arrives into a spot generally reckoned to be Bantry Bay or Ballinaskellig's, take your pick. She's accompanied by 3 men and 49 maidens. Or at least there were 3 men at the start, but 2 of them die on arrival, leaving a single male survivor by name of Fintan. And with the other 2 men dead, Fintan clearly couldn't cope with being the only fella in a group of 50 women, so he ran up a hill near Lough Derg and hid in a cave. Lo, the great flood came along 40 days later and drowned all of the poor maidens, but Fintan survived because he had wisely transformed himself into a salmon. And he later shapeshifted into an eagle and then a hawk before he became a man again about 5,000 years after the flood. And not surprisingly, after all of that, he took up a career as a historian. Now, you won't find mention of Noah's granddaughter in the Bible, but 1,000 years ago, when the Book of Invasions was the primo book in Ireland, that story of Cessair and Fintan becoming a salmon was kind of standard belief across much of this country. It was all part of a mashup of Judeo-Christian theology and Celtic mythology that enabled the Christian Church to dazzle their mostly illiterate flock with stories that linked Ireland directly to the Holy Land. And is a salmon of knowledge any less feasible than a serpent that talks in the Garden of Eden or a burning bush that speaks, for that matter? Now, where am I going with all this mumbo-jumbo? The people of Ireland, 2,000-3,000 years ago, call them Celts if you like, it's a little bit more complicated than that, but I mean the people living in Ireland at that time. To them, the rivers and lakes and wells and springs were of paramount importance to everyday life, not least as symbols of fertility and health and so on. And they were also very much part of the other world. The other world. Let's go back to the Book of Invasions now, and specifically to the people named in that book as being the 5th wave of invaders, the Tuatha De Danann. Why? Because nearly every river or lake in Ireland derives its name from the gods, and most especially the goddesses of the Tuatha De Danann. In fact, Éire, the official name for the Republic of Ireland, derives from Éireu or Éirinn, a goddess of the Tuatha De Danann. Who were these guys? Well, they were the people of the Earth Mother Goddess Anu, or Danu, and they're kind of like the elves from Lord of the Rings, if you've ever seen or read that masterpiece. They are said to have defeated the Fir Bolg in battle in 1897 BC, and then ran Ireland for the next 150 years. At least that's what it says if you run with the Annals of the Four Masters. That time frame sort of matches with the time that Newgrange was enjoying its golden age, But of course, be a little wary. This is a territory in which large dollops of fantasy meet small slivers of reality. For instance, the arrival of the Tuatha De Danann. According to one account, they arrived in flying ships in dark clouds that landed on Iron Mountain in Leitrim, of all places. And yes, there are people today who will insist that the flying ships were UFOs from outer space and that the Tuatha De Danann were aliens, but I am not going down that road today. The legends of the Tuatha De Danann are all about the other world, and they're wonderful. It's a parallel universe stuffed with everlasting youth and beauty and health and abundance and joy. It's sometimes called Tírnanog, the land of eternal youth, and it's a world that is almost impossible to access except via our waterways. In Irish mythology, our rivers and streams acted as a sort of boundary between this world and the other world. The water was the way into the other world. In the days before mirrors, you could look into a calm pond or lake and see an alternative universe with yourself and the sky and the mountains and the trees all around you. Flick a stone in it, and the vision disappears. And so in the legends, sacred rivers like the Boyne and the Shannon bestow life and wisdom and beauty on the warriors and queens of old, as do the springs that bubble up from the other world. And, as we'll hear, an awful lot of them were fated to be swallowed up by those rivers and springs. The story runs that Ireland had 7 secret streams of knowledge that ran from a place called Connla's Well, sometimes called the Well of Segish. And this enchanted well, this fountain of wisdom, was surrounded by 9 magical hazelnut trees, from which magical red hazelnuts fell into the water. And when the hazelnuts fell from the hazelnut trees, they turned the headwaters of these rivers crimson red, and they sent mystical bubbles bubbling down the river. And these bubbles are what guided all of the salmon, and trout too for that matter, up the rivers of Ireland to feed on the fallen nuts. And sure, how else do you explain the red speckles on the fishes? So, simple enough so far, one magic well with 7 rivers leading out from it. The river turns red when it's time for the salmon to come and eat some wisdom. And back in the waybacks, if you managed to catch and eat one of those salmon, you would be endowed with poetic inspiration and wisdom beyond compare. Now, the trouble was that this wisdom was not actually widely available. It was forbidden fruit, especially for females. And that really annoyed Bowen, a goddess of poetry and fertility in the stories of the Tuatha De Danann. Bowen, as you'll see, is the goddess from whom the River Boyne gets its name, and the Boyne being one of the most famous rivers in Ireland. It wends through the Boyne Valley, past the celebrated passage tombs of Newgrange, Nowth and Douth and so on, and it's considered one of the most important prehistoric landscapes in the world. For the ancients, the river that runs through the Boyne Valley was a route by which the spirits of the dead could enter the other world. Bowen, the goddess, wanted to up her wisdom, and so she made her way up to Conn as well, and she tastes the water, and then she challenges the power of the well by walking around it counterclockwise and reciting incantations, which is not recommended behaviour, especially if you're a goddess in an ancient legend. It's just not going to go well for you. And predictably, it didn't pan out so brilliantly for Bowen. The waters rush up from the well in a series of gigantic waves and scooped her up and forged a path to the sea, the path of the River Boyne. And it was all too much for Bowen herself, who drowned in the course of this drama. And she thus became one with the river. A very similar story is told about the origin of the Shannon, which takes its name from Shannon, the beautiful granddaughter of Mononorn Mochlir, the god of the sea. In her case, she went after those mystical bubbles I mentioned earlier, the ones that let the salmon and trout know that the hazelnuts are ready for eating. Well, if you should ever see those mystical bubbles, never ever eat them, because that's what Shannon did. She was actually doing fine before that. She'd caught and eaten the salmon of knowledge and thus became the wisest human being in the whole wide world, but that clearly wasn't wise enough, because when she ate the bubbles too, The well went nuts, and it rose up in a torrent and drowned poor Shannon just as Bowen was drowned in the Boyne. And just as the spirit of Bowen merged with the Boyne, so the spirit of Shannon was merged with the Shannon. In the story of Shannon, the source of the well is sometimes deemed to be a place now known as the Shannon Pot up in County Cavan. It's a lovely, nice place to walk. And on a similar vein, there's a mighty rock called the Stone of Shannon, which Finn McCool once hurled at his enemy and killed them all. And that rock can still be seen at low tide, but I'm not telling you where it is, because your name might be Bethany. And according to the legends, if someone called Bethany should ever visit that rock, that's game over for the world. And we've enough to be worrying about without that in the mix. Okay, so that's the Shannon and the Boyne. Other rivers? Well, the River Ban in Ulster takes its name from Anvona, another Tuatha Dé Danann goddess. The Barrow, the second longest river in Ireland after the Shannon? Well, the jury's still out about the derivation of the Barrow's name, but on the basis that every other river on the island seems to be named for a goddess, my money's on Berber, or Berva, a Tuatha Dé Danann goddess, whose son was born with three serpents in his heart. God love the poor fellow. One more river for the road. Well, it's a river and a loch this time. The Erne. The Erne takes its name from Erna, a beautiful lady-in-waiting to the famous Queen Maeve. And one tragic day, a fearsome giant pops out of a cave and chases Erna and her pals all the way up to wherever the Erne rises and, well, you guessed it, the waters rose up and drowned them all. Or at least that's one origin story. Another says Erne was a princess of a tribe called Erin. And another says the Erni were a sept of the Fir Bolg who were defeated in battle, after which a lake burst all over them. And whatever which way you look at it, the water rose and someone died. They're a laugh a minute, these legends, I tell you. But in case you think this is a very sexist world in which only goddesses and princesses are drowned, let us now turn to some of the lakes of Ireland, which, by and large, are named for gods. They all seem to have fairy tale origins. You've probably heard about the children of Lear and all the time they spent fluttering around as swans on Loch Darvrach. Loch Sheelan, the largest lake in County Cavan, literally means Lake of the Fairy Pool. So Sheelan, as in the Ace She, the elite group of fairies that were the last survivors of the Tuatha Dé Danann. Loch Corrib and Loch Derg, Ireland's second and third biggest lakes, are also both tied into the legends of the Tuatha Dé Danann. Derg is a play on Jarrig, which is the Irish word for red. And when the name is actually translated from the Irish, it translates into the Lake of the Red Eye. And it apparently takes its name from a one-eyed king of South Connacht and Thomond. He was tricked into plucking out his only eye and giving it to a passing poet. And when the king went to wash his wounded face in the lake, his attendant told him that the water had turned red. And the king declared that the lake would henceforth be the Lake of the Red Eye. Although some say it was the king who tricked the poet into giving up his one eye and that it was the poet who named the lake. And there are those who maintain that Loch Derg is in fact named for Bove Derg, meaning Red Crow, who was the most powerful magician of the Tuatha Dé Danann. He's said to have had his palace in a place called Sheev Bouv, which was somewhere near Portumna on the shores of Loch Derg. The jury's again out as to where Loch Ree and Loch Allen got their name. Some say Ree was an ancient god, while Loch Allen may be linked to Alunia. He's a Tuatha Dé Danann god who was also a fanatical, fire-breathing pyromaniac. He keeps burning the palace at Tara to the ground until Finn McCool beat him up. And then in Roscommon, Loch Key, it always sounds funny, that one, Loch Key, as in lock your front door, put the key in your pocket. Key is actually pronounced K in Irish, and it takes its name from K, who was a druid. He was wounded by a poisoned arrow during the annihilation of his people in a ferocious battle. And he rushed in madness and red lunacy until he came upon a heap of stones where he fell into a deep sleep, and as he did so, the waters burst forth around him and drowned him too. So that's it. That's why Lock Key exists. And if you think this notion of the waters rising suddenly is a random event, there are actually 11 lake bursts like that recorded in the Book of Invasions, including 7 during the 25-year age of the Partholon, which is not long after the flood, so maybe that's one for climactic change scholars to muse upon. And what of Loch Ness, the biggest lake on the island, that massive chunk of fresh water up in Northern Ireland? It swallows up the river band that I mentioned earlier. And Loch Ness is so big that 5 of the 6 counties of Northern Ireland have shores on it. That's how big it is. In Irish, Loch Ness translates as Aki's Lake. It's named for, well, not for the rugby player Bundy Aki, but for a Prince Aki, a son of the King of Munster, who fell in love with his stepmom. And they were trying to elope, but everything was kind of going wrong until Angus, who is a sort of god of love, he rocks up with an enormous stallion, and he says to Aki, "Use this, but for goodness sake, don't ever let the horse stop running, or it'll be the death of you." So Aki and his stepmom gallop north from Munster, and they've got as far as Ulster, when the poor horse is bursting for a pee. So they rein up and allow him to pee, and it so happens that there's a spring right by where the horse does his business, and that becomes Loch Ness, or Loch Ness, if it helps you to remember the tale. Anyway, Aki decides this is a perfect spot to settle, so he pops a capstone over the spring and builds a house. But one night he forgets to put the capstone back on, and the spring rises up and it drowns most of the cast. Or maybe you prefer the version in which Finn McCool, our warrior giant friend, scooped out a humongous chunk of rock from the earth, thus forming Loch Ness, and hurled it at a Scottish rival. It fell into the sea halfway and formed the Isle of Man. So look, these are the legends, the stories that were handed down by mouth to mouth, mind to mind in the generations before written time, and they're fabulous tales, even if they all have a similarly dark and wet conclusion. And it's important to hear that oral tradition, to consider the stories, because there is a sort of strange hint of truth in some of them. Rivers do have sources, and salmon do swim up them, and lakes do sometimes burst forth, but sure, maybe you're a realist and you'd rather learn that Loch Ness was created by tectonic shifts 400 million years ago than Finn McCool chucking mud balls. I understand, I hear you. And the same goes for those who want to know how all of this ties in with the physical evidence of, say, the geology, and indeed the archaeology, like the ancient heads on Boa Island in Loch Earn. And I'll address the ology of geology and archaeology in the next episode. Thank you for tuning in, and you can hear plenty more episodes by searching Waterways Ireland on Spotify, Apple, Google, or whichever platform you use. You'll find all you need to know about Irish Waterways at waterwaysireland.org, or my archive of historical tales, mostly Irish, at turtlebunbury.com. A big thank you to series producer Ali Bunbury, and also to our technical producer, Liam Mulvaney of 11 for 10 Productions, who also composed the beautiful music that runs with this series.